back, everybody, to another awesome episode of the Be Better podcast. It seems like, Devin, we have flutter famine on these, right? That's sort of the flutter famine or feast or famine?
I've not previously heard the expression flood or famine, sir.
Well, you know, some of the best broadcasters in the world just make stuff up on the spot, and I feel like that is exactly what I just did.
That's a real Bobke roll moment.
It is. It's a flood
feast, feast or famine.
Feast or famine. But we seem to go kind of in runs or tears for when we're or how often we do podcasts. We're not like the regular podcast out there. We're not like the Daily. We're not doing them every day. We're not like Spitting Chicklets. We're not doing them for 3.5 hours. We're not like any other ones that have like we're here on the first of the month. That we're just kind of like. Whenever we kind of either whenever you bother me,
yep,
or whenever
almost
I bother
always,
you.
No, it's almost always one way.
Hey, this time I said to you though, I said to you yesterday, I'm like, hey, like one pod tomorrow, and you're like, yeah, like do it,
let's go,
yeah, bro, let's get in, jam on, elephant, okay, no,
let's rock,
yeah, but that's how it kind of seems, doesn't it?
We let the listener get hungry.
Yeah, well, it.
We want the listener to want it.
We do. We don't want to try and, you know, just shove things down people's throats.
We're not oversaturating the market with our brand of uninformed commentary.
No, but you have other podcasts that you have to balance, too.
I do have a lot of shows to manage.
Do you have any realtor podcasts that you do?
No, it's always this side angle, because my other podcast is the Cycling Dads podcast.
How come you don't do something on your real estate stuff?
How many episodes of a pure real estate content do you want to listen to?
None.
Okay.
Okay, just check it.
Asked and answered then, huh?
Okay, well.
Even if someone's in a home buying or selling mood and they are like, ooh, let me listen in for these tips. How many episodes? Okay, well, then we do your deal. Then you're done being a listener. So I could do more direct real estate content, but is that best suited to the podcast platform? I would say maybe not.
Maybe not. I mean, so it seems like real estate agents, and I know that it's getting, it's becoming a formula. Because I saw South Park parody it.
Oh, yes.
The idea of what you're producing, because you have pretty good production quality of like showing homes. Yep. You and Ben go and look at homes and yep. You kind of like walk through.
Oh, you mean my fake HGTV show?
Yeah,
not a podcast, but I do have my own fake television show.
But you're like wearing a vest, holding a cup of coffee. And I don't know if you've seen this, the one with Cartman where he's trying to sell Kyle's house. And it's like, you know, they do the formula of. You know, the hipster kid walking out and he's like, hey, we're here. Let's take a look at this house. It's great. And then you're walking through and seeing all the things. But South Park has now parodied that.
You don't realize how stunning and how stunningly accurate and cutting their parody is until they do something in your world or your niche. And you're like, oh, they got us.
It's so there.
They're getting all of these little niches. They hit a niche and they do it.
It's so well. I saw a guy up, and I think I sent you. I saw a guy up in Grand Rapids did one. And I saw, and he was like walking through, but it was the exact same thing, like literally carrying the, you know, the cup of coffee from wherever he got. And he says, hey, let's walk through and let's see what we got.
Let's see what we have.
Spacious kitchen here in the glacial backgrounds of, you know, the northern woods of Minnesota.
It's tough because everyone follows R&D in my industry, rip off and duplicate.
So very few
people are clever or original.
Okay.
So you follow certain templates and people just go with that. And it's why would you innovate when you can just, okay, this one is a proven plan. Let me just follow this template for videos or audio or whatever content. So people are churning out this content, sometimes to great effect, sometimes to no effect. With Ben and Devin House Heaven, my fake HGTV show, it's just me and my buddy Ben. Ben likes to come see houses with me. So ever since I got licensed, Ben has just come with me to see houses here and there.
Yep.
And so we'll go look at cool houses, and it's like, well, let's make something fun out of this. And so we call him an unlicensed home critic, which he is. He's very critical of homes.
There you go.
What we struggle with on that is anytime I'm publicly speaking on a listing in Minnesota.
Yep.
I feel honor and duty bound to only say the positive or only frame it in a way to help sell that property.
Yep.
If I go into someone else's listing and I poo-poo it and critique it and I'm mean and nasty about it, it's going to destroy my relationships and reputation in the industry.
Okay.
And then also kind of, it's almost like an ethical breach. Like someone is selling that property. I'm going into an active live listing and denouncing it. It just seems wildly inappropriate. So in Minnesota, where it's market, you know, my market here, I want to be really careful. Like, I'm not stepping on anyone's toes, and I'm not trying to ruin a seller's efforts to sell their home. That's
so is this Minnesota nice? Is this what you're kind of getting at?
To a degree, yeah. So
are there people out there that, like, go out and just, like, lay in and just say, this is what sucks. The door jams are way off. Like, dude, it's got a flooding basement.
That would be way more compelling content. I would like to do that, and Ben and I have our private critiques that we share with each other of each of these homes we see.
This is the director's cut. This is what's fallen on the floor. This is what's not shown to the public.
That we can't show. To me, it seems philosophically inappropriate. Like, if you were, you know, looking at a training plan, some other athlete's training plan from a different coach, and you just were publicly denouncing it or, you know, really criticizing someone, it's like, well, you're tearing that athlete down, you're tearing a coach, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah.
That's not your place to do that. Or if you got on a soapbox and were, you know, it just would be inappropriate, you know, within your field. Like, maybe there's critiques you can offer privately to people.
So you're holding a higher level of professionalism.
Yep.
You're not there just for the slash and burn media.
Because if someone could turn around to me and say, like, you impeded the sale of my home, not only is it, to me, it feels unprofessional, like that's counter to my job. When it's my client, if I'm bringing a buyer to a home, I critique freely. You know, it's like, let's make sure it makes sense for my client. That's a different conversation, but that's not public facing. That's between me and my client.
Well, the question would be, like, why would you do that?
Because it's better content.
Yeah.
So, there's a YouTube channel, a gentleman who's a high-powered agent, luxury agent out of L.A. He watches
million-dollar guys.
Not one of those guys.
Okay.
He watches videos of these luxury home tours, and then he critiques the mansion.
Oh, he's that guy. He's the video inside the video.
So he's the reaction guy, and they're brilliant. And because he has a real career analyzing high-end properties and understanding spaces and lots and quality, he does a very good job. So it's really interesting. I've been watching a ton of it this winter, but I can't do that. I can't step into someone's listing and then
you're not
say the nice things and say, it just feels wrong to me.
But I love that in other things. I love watching chefs rip apart other chefs.
Yep.
Like, there's a guy that wears a baseball cap, and he always talks about, like, oh, that's, I can't believe you're eating that, or whatever. Like, this lady made a hot dish, but forgot to take the sticker out of the bottom of the pan, and, like, he just, like, went crazy off of that. And I love that. I know, I love watching guys that are, like, home inspectors. Like, home inspector, do not do this, where, like, they put the, I saw one yesterday. They put the garage door opener in, and they basically, like, routed out the joists of the rafters to make it fit as it went closer to the door.
Is there anything more terrifying? I mean, those home inspector videos, they're brilliant. That's brilliant marketing for those inspectors. But it's terrifying to me as an agent, thinking of the number of people buying, especially new construction, paying $500,000, $600,000, $700,000, $800,000, $900,000 for a new house.
How much of that is made up, though? I mean, are some of those just like, there's a guy that does this thing called, F it Friday.
Yeah.
Cole always sends me those.
Like, those are so good.
Put like 3 inches of like clear caulk between the side of the countertop and the wall.
Those, I assume, whoever is behind that account is compiling crazy videos other people send to him. So I assume that's like a fun compilation.
It has to be.
But they're real. Like, someone took a video of shoddy workmanship. So that stuff is out there. The new construction inspectors, it just terrifies me because it's like, it makes me so hesitant and want to be so mindful with the builders I would ever bring a client to work with. And I'm already pretty...
Like putting PEX through an outlet box?
Just like, boop.
Just right through it, screw two holes in the side of an outlet box.
Hey, we tested for moisture and we found a Heineken bottle in the insulation in the attic.
Those would be... I mean, there's nothing like that out there for coaching, though. Like, if you there's nothing out there that, like, with triathlon coaching that does that.
There's snarky, you know, there's commentary on certain platforms like a Slow Twitch forums.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to go after people. And there's certain targets.
But that's not coaches eating other coaches, though.
No. There's a guy.
It could be people that call themselves coaches.
There's a Brett Sutton. You know, everyone praises or criticizes Brett Sutton openly. But he's such
Triathlon Jesus?
Triathlon Jesus. He's such a controversial firebrand of a figure. He wants that almost.
Yeah. But that's like a Macca style where he was, you know, putting himself out there, trying to, you know, like, just stir it up.
Yep.
And I think Brett Sutton kind of has had that. Is he still actively coaching?
I don't know.
I haven't, outside of us talking about it, I feel at some point in time, people are no longer going to understand who that is. Getting old and we're just talking about old people.
Well, it's because his zenith was Chrissy Wellington, right?
Yeah.
And then...
then he was in the Brownlees too, wasn't he? Wasn't he involved with the Brownlees?
Nope.
Thought he brought them up too.
Nope, I don't think he was ever affiliated with those boys.
Just being British doesn't kind of keep you in the same sphere.
One of the, I don't know if, one of the biggest internet triathlon self-proclaimed journalists, who is my buddy on Twitter.
Uh-oh. Is it Twitter or is it X?
I will, I'm dead naming it, but I would call it Twitter. It's Twitter to me.
Yeah.
He told me in DMs, hey, yeah, the peak women from this one training camp, all, and this is allegations allegedly, were blood doping. So it's like he would have like a, one or two like stunning world champs, and then some a stable of other pros, but they were all blood doping, or so the champs were blood doping. That was the allegation. But he's this Mr. Anti-Doping journalist. He tells me this. I don't. I still don't know if he was alleging it or joking.
Who is this?
Brad Culp. I love Brad Culp so much. So Brad Culp, he claims to be an anti-doping journalist. He seems to have this hot scoop,
in
which may or may not, he may or may not have been pulling my leg. I can't say whether he was making a real allegation that he had heard this or if he was just joshing me. But he never went anywhere. He never broke the story. Never did a deep dive.
Does he, is he afraid of getting sued?
I don't know.
I mean,
but if it, that's a real thing,
it's not like he's, you know, is. Does Brad Culp work for a journalistic, like outsource? Like, is he, does he work for a newspaper?
I think they're all shut down.
I know. I'm like, I was going to say,
you can't work for something that's been shut down.
It doesn't really work. I think maybe like, who would be out there? I mean, that you could look at. I mean, it would be like Global Cycling TV. That would be one.
Do they cover tri stuff?
I don't know. I've never seen them cover tri stuff. I'm just trying to think of somebody who produces like good, consistent content.
But if one of the premier pro tri training groups led by this firebrand coach, if there's an allegation,
and he's not putting it out there,
that the world champs are blood doping to achieve their highest level of success,
I love that he's DMing it to you and not telling the world. And now you, now he's putting it in your hand, and now you're putting it out there. So, according, so you're gonna like air quotes, according to Brad Culp.
All of this is allegedly.
According to Brad Culp.
Is this, wait, will we say this is parody or satire to protect ourselves?
I don't know. We're gonna
allegations,
say
parody, satire. This is comedy.
I don't know. It's like it's like exposed. Like he is he the deep throat of doping in triathlon?
Well, I'm sure he's heard. He gets all the rumors from a variety of people.
I'm sure.
By being such a powerful triathlon journalist, but you can't call yourself an anti-doping journalist and have us sit on a story like that if it's
just
true.
Just sit back and complain all day long.
Gee
it's
whiz.
Like, it's like, I mean, we know what's happening. I mean, it's not like it's, we don't know what's happening. It's like the, was it Salazar that was like popped for having all the Nike athletes out in Oregon?
His big dogs were Galen Rupp and the guy from the UK.
Yeah, they were all like, but he was had them all doped to the hilt too.
They weren't. He liked to play in that gray zone. He was that gray zone doping.
He's a micro dosing,
abusing therapeutic use exemptions and doing all kinds of shady stuff. That and maybe going full blown EPO, maybe going there, but all, playing in that gray area.
Yeah,
to the nth degree.
Vitamins.
Yeah,
it's all vitamins. That's just crazy. It's, let's take that note and let's turn towards.
Can we bleep out every name that I just referenced? I just cannot afford to get
sued. I'm going to hashtag all of these in every social post that's going out.
I cannot afford a lawsuit.
That's a head. The headline's going to be Devin Palmer, realtor from MSP moves
makes shocking allegations.
International doping allegations.
I've been saying the word stunning a lot, Chris. One of my clients pointed out that us realtors lean super heavy on the word stunning.
Is that your...
So I've been working... I think cyclists need to stop saying the word stoked. Any form of the word stoked. Get rid of it. And then realtors, we need to be banned from saying stunning. And right. I've been abusing it already this episode. It's on the mind.
You need to have a little buzzer that's like attached to you. Every
shop
time.
Caller.
Yeah, that could just hit you with it.
Go to a bike shop and tell me you don't hear the word stoke or stoked often.
It's been there. But that's like a washed up surfing term, isn't it? Stoked?
Did we just inherit it from the surfers?
I think you did. I think cycling has taken over things that probably from BMX stuff.
Okay.
Road cycling is probably taking it from BMX stuff.
Hand me down cool phrases.
Oh, they're terrible.
What's the dorky cool hockey phrase?
Oh, there's just one. There's so many. Like Cole calls me a duster all the time.
A duster.
Yeah, he's like, you're a duster. You're so dust. You're so doused. And then he like for like you're so doused. You're so doused. You know, it's like you're a beaut, like being a beauty. Mm-hmm. Like that's a good one. Those are all good ones. But I think saying someone's dust or you know a gem or you know like the
beaut,
stuff.
Gem, dust, dusty,
oh,
duster.
Yeah, like you're a twig. You're ankle beater.
Now, Christopher, has anyone called you a twig?
Yes, all the time. Spelt, cut. Compared to most beer leaguers, yes.
Compared to the average 40-year-old beer leaguer.
So if you take half of the guys that I play hockey with, they look like in the old Nintendo hockey game where it was you had three choices. You had the little skinny guy that was like, you know, super fast but couldn't shoot, or you had the little mini guy that was like kind of middle to everything, and then you had the big jumbo dude. Yeah, most of the guys I play with look like the big jumbo dudes.
Gotcha.
I've said Biggins to some, like, hey Biggins, big shot there Biggins, nice snipe Biggins. Like, I shouldn't do that. I really
seems pretty
that.
Insensitive.
Well, because they're half my age too, and they'll just throw me down to destroy me. But that's what you get. But there is hockey has such a subculture of vernacular that is just crazy, and it changes all the time. I mean, it's like it sounds horrible, and it can be really over the top too. And I thought it would be cool if we talked like that up until the point when Cole started talking like that, and I'm like, oh man,
no,
this is bad news bears. But it is all out there. I'd say dust is the word that, like, hey, you're dust. What's up, dust? Oh, you're so dust.
It's so versatile.
I know it works in so many levels. Let's talk about cycling, because first of all, you and I haven't ridden this year yet.
Nope.
Which needs to happen, because it's like the roads are...
I ride three times a week, Christopher. Who's the missing link here?
On Zwift or what?
I've ridden outside only once.
Oh, okay. There we go. Say, can I bring my trainer over to your house and we'll ride together?
Zwift. Would you like to do a Zwift group ride?
Could we do a virtual ride together?
See you in the Zwiftiverse.
I know. No, but the UCI is back, right?
Yep.
Have you been keeping up with anything? Because we're coming into, we've had a couple of races so far.
Yep.
Coming into the Spring Classics. Anything have you...
I just saw the social media clip finishes of that. Was it? Which one was it that just happened?
Milan-San Remo.
Saw the finish of that one. Super fun finish.
I know.
Yep.
But so what's your take on that? Do you think that, like, because they really are putting it out there that Vanderpool is going to be maybe like the big gun coming in this year?
As well, he should be.
Yeah.
He has the track record of doing that.
I know.
That's not breaking news. The guy who's been winning the classics is going to continue to win the classics.
I know. Well, do you think he can take that and move it out faster, though?
I think
Pogacar's been, like, he's still up there.
Yeah.
I mean, and like, literally, because I think he took, like, a number of stages at the Tour Down Under as well, which is early form.
Oh, yeah. Pogacar's on incredible form already. But up against Vanderpool or other full-blown classics guys, Pogacar either has to have an uphill finish or breakaway.
Yeah.
Vanderpool has to really mess up to lose to Pogacar in a regular sprint.
I would agree. Do you think there's enough in the spring classics that are going to... Do you think, you know, things like the Mur de Fuy or any of the cobble sections as they go into, you know, northern France and in Belgium, think those are going to be... pieces that are going to work for or against Pogacar?
The extra fatigue probably plays well into his hands, you know, like the uber long, the 200K events.
Yeah.
With the extra physical rigors probably play into his hands, but the chaos and uncertainty of the cobbles, you know, he could flat just the same or bust a wheel just the same as anyone else.
Yeah, I mean those are all risks that you have, and it does come with, you know, timing and how well you can handle yourself. I think they're two separate things. I think the cobbles are one piece and the hills are another one.
Yeah,
because the cobbles, I think what makes you better in the hills, obviously, when you're looking at like the Mur de Fuy, like 23% grade. I mean, crazy, you know, and the road's like what, 4 feet wide.
Yeah.
So it gets, if you're not in the front, you're screwed because you're basically going to get in a stop and go in the back, right? It's like getting behind a traffic accident. But that has a different impact than the cobbles, which normally you're not just hitting one, you're hitting like sections, 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 and where you are. And a little bit depends on the day, You know, is it wet? Is it dry?
My question is, Vanderpool, this is his prime time. This is his best season. He's a one-day guy. Mm-hmm. We've seen him even the last 2-3 years struggle in the tour, sometimes even just dropping out of the tour. He just is not physically or mentally peaking for that right now. In this one-day stuff, he's brilliant.
Yeah.
Van Aert, in the last few years, has been able to be a super domestic in the tour, stage winner in the tour, and super classics guy, so one-day guy. Pogacar has been, obviously, on another level, dominating the Grand Tours. And a little, he's dabbled a little bit in the classics and been up there and sometimes won in the classics in the past few years. But it seems like it's been more of a dabble in concert with the Grand Tours. I don't understand how he can dominate a Grand Tour when they're more competitive than ever and be competing with these boys who are so physically perfectly suited and focused on just these events.
I mean, to come in, like, I mean, he was third, but he was like right there, yep. You know, I think starting to prove himself as maybe one of the best cyclists, not only of just, I would say this time in cycling, but maybe historically, you know, because to be able to work all around through those, that's a historical
yep.
marker. Cause you think about like that poster on the side of you right there, you know, the guys that were legends of the Peloton. Think of those guys. I mean, you go even back to Eddie Merckx, right? And he, like, you have to be able to, if you're going to be considered one of the best, you have to be able to show yourself in the one days. So, and we, if we think about what's coming up here, because that's not, what's next? It's at, we got Gent-Wevelgem. That's a big one in Flanders. So that's, I think the Muir goes up the Ghent, doesn't it?
Okay.
The other big ones are going to be, Paris-Roubaix are coming up, Flanders, Amstel Gold. Those are all going to be big. And those occur like quick. Yeah. Like you're talking about like having not a lot of recovery. And again, a lot of those are used to lead up to Grand Tour pieces, but, maybe better set for, you know, I would say a one day might be better set for a guy who has maybe not the best team. Because you can still win a one day as a singular person.
So all the Cobble Classics, you need to be positioned well in the Peloton coming into the Cobbles, right?
Yep.
So if you don't have a strong team, you're relying solely on your own strength and finesse to piggyback and to be where you need to be. So I would argue even UAE...
But it's harder to
carry. How does UAE invest enough to have strong enough A players to support Pogacar in his efforts on classics and the Grand Tours?
But I don't think a team can roll through a cobble section the same it can roll through just a regular road section town, right? Because the cobbles break things up, and it's harder to roll. Like, let's say if you did have like 4 or 5 guys on a team and you roll them through consistent cobble sections, they all have to be as competent there. And then there's so many more opportunities for things to go sideways. I think it's a better opportunity for a solo guy, like how a Sagan would do it.
Yeah. I suppose you're not wrong. In the finales of all these, it's not the sprint trains.
No, it's not.
It's always 1-1-1-1 from different teams fighting it out at the finish.
It's a breakaway.
Yeah.
It's a battle of attrition. You know, it's a little bit of skill. Because we've seen a lot of the cyclocross guys that have done really well because it's bike handling and capability to go there. And then, you know, luck. Like, think of the Hencappy era, you know? Yep. Hencappy, like how unlucky he was. His bike fell apart doing this, doing that. It's like he couldn't do anything.
So that is it. The Danish fella from Trek Liddell who can contend at these. Maybe Trek Liddell isn't able to support stars as well in the 3 days, but it's like if he has the chops... Maybe he's still contending a lot of these classics. Shoot, what's his name? Mads.
Is that what it is?
Madsen. Per Mad?
Let me look.
Mikkelsen.
Let me look.
Our levels of information are
I know. This is where the
higher than ever.
This is where the prep work really would have came in well for you, Devin, if you were to go through. So let's look up the teams. And let's look up, who are we looking up? Trek. Okay.
The Danish guy. I think he's Danish.
Is he Danish? Or aren't they all to some extent? Aren't they all at some point? Let's see.
Mads Petersen.
Mads Petersen.
Is that him?
I'm looking through. I've got to go through. Like the UCI site, Devin, is not the best one in the world.
All right. We're going to look him up. I'm going to find him before you.
Okay. You are. Because you're going to try and do that. And I don't know that that's so well for you. Which team are you looking at?
He's on Trek.
Liddell Trek. Well, there's three. They're like Trek.
Mads Pedersen. I looked it up. Success. Born in 95. He's world champ. So it's like you have those names. I'm so impressed. Pogacar.
They've got an ugly uniform.
Well.
What do you mean? Well, yeah. It's what? Like, that's. I mean, come on. Like that is a like what? What is that up on top? It's some. I mean, it looks like they tried to rip off Maypie from like way back when, and then the bottom's just blue.
They're doing their own thing. It's tough when you swing for the fences. You have your own style.
I mean, you got like you're gonna see them. Obviously, they look like a Joseph in the Technicolor Dreamcoat out there.
Well, it's tough. Like, okay, they have theirs is at least more distinctive. I feel like a lot of the teams, their branding is almost indistinguishable.
It's terrible.
It's pretty bad these days.
I mean, so at what point in time do you just go to like a simple kit? You know, like something where it doesn't like because you have to have a ton of different team names on there, or at least you know a couple of them.
Well, yeah, it's not just Trek; it's Liddell Trek.
And yeah,
Visma Lisa Bike.
Yeah,
I mean, they at least did the yellow thing well. The honeybee thing.
Yeah, the bottle like those are that was a good one. I mean, you go back to some of the best ones. I think it started down the road when it was like Saxo Bank went to just black. When Saxo Bank Trek went to black and white, it was just kind of dopey. But like. Like some of the really good ones, like that stand out. You need a color that stands out.
Yeah.
Right? Like when, like you need like a lime green of a leaky gas, or you need, like when T-Mobile was all pink.
Yep.
You know, you need something that's going to stand out in the crowd.
And so you're contending this beautiful jersey stands out only because it's ugly?
100%. I would die on that cross to say that is like one of the top five worst jerseys.
Here's my question. Where's Wout? Is Wout on form or not? Where's Wout?
I haven't heard. Where's Wout?
Why is he not winning?
I don't know.
We're so used to being him being a dominant player
in the early time. Yeah, and that's what we're not seeing. But maybe he's coming up.
Yep.
Maybe he's sitting back. Maybe he is going to come through.
That guy has had a couple of painful crashes these last few years.
Aren't they all though?
Whew.
What's a non-painful crash?
Well, I mean, like
into a hay bale on the side of the
road. Semi-catastrophic crash where he has broken bones and he's out for a portion of the season, and then has to like, I think both him and Vingegaard last year had to rush back into shape for the tour. You know, like had bad spring crashes, and then had to
go into
crunch time to get ready for the tour.
If you think about like
Vingegaard 2-3 years ago had to do that, I think for the 22 or 23 tour.
Is there a tougher sport to have to endure outside of cycling? And I'm going to put it this way. Here are the things that you mm-hmm. have to endure. Number one, weight management.
Yep.
So that's almost like professional bodybuilding. So there's all things that come with that. Number two is, you know, high level of endurance.
Yep.
Right. Number three, risk. I don't know that any other sport has the same level of risk as cycling does. I don't know. Because you think about speed.
Yep.
Result of a crash. And then layer into protection. They've got the minimal amount of protection. They've got a helmet. That's really all that's protecting them. Bikes coming in at you. Fences. Spectators. Dogs. Cows. Whatever.
Yeah.
Doesn't auto racing. You're going faster. But you got a car around you. You got all kinds of stuff. Hockey. You got all kinds of like protective equipment you're wearing. Football. All that. Tennis. No, you don't. But tennis balls don't hurt.
Well, no. They hurt, but
in
not,
theory, they're not gonna break bones. Could you say that professional cycling is maybe one of the hardest and most dangerous professional sports out there? Is there another one?
I would say between the various physiological demands, because it's like it's long days both in training and racing. The racing, it's not just endurance, it's also going from easy to sprint to easy to sprint to threshold to sprint, all up and down all day while managing your energy, while managing team dynamics, while managing extreme technical demands.
Yep. Capabilities.
And then the risk at any time you could die. You could literally fall off the side of a mountain. You could hit a
100%.
Hit a dog and die.
And your fatigue directly impacts your ability to stay safe. Whereas football doesn't.
Yeah.
You know, you get smoked in football. And you're, you know, well, number one, you don't compete nearly as much in football as you do in professional cycling. Yeah. Think about the number of times that they're competing throughout the season. And then if you like, yeah, if you're fatigued, you're not losing control of your bike.
The physical rigor and ultimate risk of cycling, I would say, is among the highest.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the long-term damage, the sports where you get multiple concussions, your beautiful sport of hockey, football, soccer, boxing, yeah. MMA, wrestling, all the rugby, all the concussion-heavy sports.
Yep, contact sports.
Frequently getting your bell rung, I would argue there's a higher chance of enduring problems from those sports. Maybe. What is the data?
So I don't know, but I think that there, I don't know. First of all, I don't know if there is any data. So if you would look at results of contact, and we'll take hockey because yeah. it's probably the most consistent where you're going to get the I would say the most consistent contact happening. You have the biggest risk in hockey right now is lacerations, getting cut in the neck and having to cut open your jugular and you die because yeah. of that. That's probably the biggest thing. The concussions are a piece of it, but at the professional level, it even gets a little bit less. Like then you would, I would say it's more dangerous at the lower levels.
Where it's a little more wild and loose.
Oh, yeah.
And people aren't in control of their bodies.
Everybody's trying yeah. to make a gun for it. You know, everybody's trying to be a goon or something. I would say it's a junior's level. It's probably more violent than it is at the pro level. But I think cycling, you have with the dynamic of speed and also the fact that you're not in a controlled atmosphere, that makes it more violent.
Yeah.
That makes you more susceptible to it. The other thing is the whole idea that your performance is so tied to your body composition.
Yeah.
Whereas hockey's not that. Hockey, it's not like your guys are shaving off, you know, 4 kilos to so they can get faster in the 200 feet. You know, you have to stay lean. You have to stay very lean to be competitive because every ounce you put on makes it harder for you to push watts. So I think from that standpoint, the demand to be thin puts you at a possible risk for, let's say, calcium deficiency, so your bones are weaker. You don't have as much muscle mass, like in your upper body, to protect a clavicle.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's ever breaking femurs, really. You know, because they got quads that are like the size of, you know, tree trunks.
The demand of your day-to-day life is what, 3 to 6 hours of riding, most days of the year. Is that? I mean, I assume that's how most of them train. Is like,
yeah.
But think of the energy, like, okay, I have to fuel for a relatively extreme amount of training while also eating like a bird to maintain sustain an abnormally low body weight.
Yeah, it's
I think hard.
It's only during like grand tours when they start basically just putting anything and everything inside of them.
Yeah.
Because of how much they're competing in the calorie burn per day, you know, that they're looking at. None of that is the same in any other sport. Now, nutrition is science and dialed in other sports. I was watching the nutritionist for, I think it was the Vancouver Canucks, was talking, or no, I'm sorry, for the Minnesota Gophers, was talking about what, like, they're actually giving guys pickles before they get out on the ice. They have, like, pomegranate and beet juice waiting for them as soon as they come off. So, like, they're looking at, like, what they're prepping them with and then how they're recovering immediately after. But they're only, what, maybe, say, 2 hours on the ice?
Yep.
You know, so it's not the same as cycling, where, like you said, it's time and time and time and time and time.
Because the tour can be short days. Time trial can be, what, 35 to 60 minutes.
Yep.
And then...
And maybe even less than that. But those... And then the days off, even on the days off, they're riding.
They ride 3 hours on the day off.
Yeah, because you can't afford not to.
Yeah. And then, a short stage might be four and a half hours, and long stages are up to 5.5, 6 hours sometimes in the tour, fair to say?
Yep.
Yeah, it's just such an extreme demand.
Getting back to it, do you think there is a more physically demanding sport outside of this than cycling? Could you make an argument that Ironman triathlon is just as demanding or have just as much risk?
There just isn't the same risk, because the Ironman cycling is straight time trial. You have to really goof up to crash. I've done it. Don't get me wrong, I've done it, but.
And do you think that with the invention of indoor cycling at the level that it is, Zwift and all those things, where a lot of athletes are becoming like Zwift cyclists.
Yeah.
And that is proving to be problematic on like courses, like when Ironman World Champs went to France.
Yeah.
And that became problematic because riders did not have the technical capability to descend that they would if they rode outside. They're obviously not at they're not at that risk. They're obviously, you know, there is more training time. They're, you know, like time in the sport. Their sport probably takes longer since you could say competition day is, you know, 7 hours, but they're not competing nearly as often.
No. I mean, peak pros do 2 or 3 high level Ironmans a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe a smattering of halves.
Yep. And if we even looked at the cycling portion of it, the cycling portion isn't nearly as risky.
Yeah.
Because there's no bunch sprints in cycling. You could say like in draft legal, but then now you take the quantity of what Ironman is into an Olympic distance or an international distance draft legal, where you do have groups working, but not like sprint groups. Nobody's doing intermediary sprints,
yeah,
you know, inside a draft legal triathlon. So I think that would take it. And I'm just trying to workshop this out. If we, you know, how do we make a case for cycling being the most dangerous and not have another sport that involves cycling say, are they in the mix as well?
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see, I mean, where are the casualties per hobby? What's that data look like?
Like how many people die in professional sailing every year?
Because a lot of people, you know, I think of wrestling. Wrestling's incredibly intense. Mm-hmm. High-level wrestling, the training is beyond rigorous. They go so far overboard to make sure their guys have that edge of toughness and that mentality.
And they have weight management as well.
Intense weight management. And then they have to compete and compete again. And compete. You know, when they're in tournaments, it's not just like a one match and done. It's multiple times.
Yep. But duration is short.
Duration is pretty short.
So, and your risk of falling is mitigated by a mat.
Yeah.
You have a referee overseeing moves that might be considered illegal.
Yeah.
You might get a...
I think they can have a boatload of concussions in that sport, but is the chance of falling off a mountain or hitting a dog at 50 kilometers an hour... It's weird to say. It's a combat sport, but it's almost more moderated where...
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to slam on the ground from 70 miles an hour.
Or you blow a tire and you're going to go off the corner of a turnabout, you know, on the descent off the, you know, off a mountain.
Yeah.
And then you are going over the guardrail, the little itty-bitty guardrail.
As far as chronic injuries, you know, cyclists, you train enough, you're going to get injured and you're going to have this and that wear and tear on your body, but cyclists are a little bit dinged up. Runners are way more dinged up.
Yeah.
Wrestlers, I don't know how many wrestlers you know, but they always seem to be pretty dinged up. A bunch of my uncles who are boomers who wrestled in high school are still, they have like lingering issues from when they got dinged up in high school wrestling.
My buddy Brad's got cauliflower ears.
Yeah.
You know, you see that. I'm like, you can tell ex-wrestlers, they have that physical cartilage damage. You bring up runners. Now runners, like they'll hit a couple of the same metrics. So you have weight management.
Yep.
You have volume and quantity. Like runners are running a crap ton.
120 to 140 miles a week, pretty standard for pro-level marathon training.
Yep, so that's a breakdown. Competing, you know, if you're looking at professional marathoners, like especially like a lot of the Kenyans and Africans that are coming over, they're running, you know, for a career. So they're running, you know, maybe, what, 3 a month?
Marathons?
Yeah.
No. No, 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 no.
You don't think so?
No.
How do you know?
The true elites who have the luxury, like like the Paul Tergats of the world,
okay,
they have the luxury of still picking their spots. They can pick 2 or 3 a year to peak for, but like the lower mid-level Kenyans who are still elite by a world-class standard, I think they just go on a hot streak. If they can get out of the country, get a visa to go somewhere and race, get someone to fly them out to race, they'll go on a hot streak. They'll race whatever they can.
How much is whatever they can?
Maybe it's a couple races a month, but it's not 3 marathons a month.
Okay.
Can you show me the results of someone named?
I can't, but I'm thinking about like how do they make it financially viable? If you're not winning and you're out like chugging on the tour, you know, you have to have something else. You have to have something else supporting you. So, you know, they're not all like some of them drop out.
Nope.
They may not be completing three, but are you entering three? Like, and their season is a lot shorter.
Yeah.
So okay, I'll back it off. I'll say two a month.
Two marathons. I don't think you can get out of the country. Maybe you, if you're like, okay, I can do the Tempe Marathon and then go do one in, there's one in Florida that I can go do and make $8,000 if I win them. Maybe they would do two in a month if they could. I don't even know.
Yeah.
We're really speculating on that one.
So let's say, for just argument's sake, let's say two a month.
Yep.
And they're doing it for a 3-month season. So they're doing maybe 6 marathons in a summer.
That would break you down, no doubt about that.
100% it would.
Yep.
So, but there's not a longevity in marathon running. You know, there's not a lot of people that have become like lifelong marathon champions. It seems like it's a very finite window of...
The true world-class elites seem to have it is very finite, where it's like you have your mojo, you're flying for a few years, and then you start to break down a little bit.
And you know the names, but they're not always like in there ripping it up, you know?
Eliud Kipchoge from Kenya has been an interesting one because he broke into the world scene, I want to say, when he won the 5K on the track in the world championships in 2003. Then in 2004, he was battling with the best miler of all time and the world record holder in the 5 and 10K, Kenenisa Bekele. So wins in 2003 as a 19-year-old, is battling for Olympic gold in 2004. I think he came in third, so he got bronze in 2004. And he's maintained his career, and then he became the best marathoner of this past era. I would say he's, you know, obviously he's done with the peak of his competitive career now, but he stayed really at a world-class level almost 20 years.
He was a viable winner, but at different distances.
Yep.
Like a maturation of distances. It's almost like somebody, like a triathlete starting off doing, you know, collegiate sprint draft legal, going into the Olympic distance and racing ITU Olympic World Triathlon and then moving on to Ironman.
Yeah. You certainly don't see as many runners stay at the true world-class level in more than one or two Olympiads. It's hard.
Unless you're Hunter Kemper.
How many Olympia? Hunter was the best at getting to the Olympics.
So it's funny because I was upstairs in the Garage Mahal working the other day. And I was trying to get the Sonos to work because, like, the Sonos One app, like, it just screws up. It kicks you out, and it makes you go to the Sonos. And I've got the picture of Hunter, the signed picture that when he and I were doing work together, he got a signed picture of Hunter, and it's like, you know, and he put, like, all the Olympics that who was in. It was, like, 2000, 2004, 2008, 2012. And it's like, and London's like, who's that guy? And I'm like, oh, that's my friend Hunter. It's like, what did he do? It's like he's in the Olympics. How many times? And I'm like, this many times. Is he in the Olympics in this one? I'm like, no, that's at Hy-Vee in Iowa. What's Hy-Vee? I'm like, crappy grocery store you're never going to go to, but there you go.
Hey, they're pretty good.
I know. I've never been to a Hy-Vee.
Oh.
I have been to a Hy-Vee when we went and brought the M-Jets down to race Pigman that one year. We had all those funny mustaches.
All that marketing money they spent on your sport, and you can't reciprocate with a little business here and there, buddy?
I think, well, no, because they didn't have Hy-Vees up here at the time.
You can't show a little reciprocity. You can't even say a thank you. You can't even say they have a nice...
I'm a Cub Foods man.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm actually a Kowalski's guy now.
Cool.
Because we're banning Target right now. We're a Target
Your hockey locker business is doing well enough. You're a Kowalski's guy.
Hey, it's not like I'm shopping at Whole Foods. It's only Kowalski's, right? It's only Kowalski's. But it also is like a block from our house. So.
You do have the best little Kowalski's market in town.
It's so nice.
It's right there.
It's so nice. It's like you just like, especially I can send Julian down. Hey, I need a dozen eggs. Okay. And then he comes.
You got it, Duster?
Yeah. He's like, go get yourself Dusty. Like he comes back with a dozen eggs and he comes back with like everything to make chocolate chip cookies as well. I'm like, oh, I love that guy. Although he burns through butter that's so fast.
Interesting.
I went to make breakfast this morning and like he had like burned through all the butter in the fridge and he also made these.
Doing what?
Oh, he made
buttering toast?
No, he made homemade waffles. He made these chocolate chip cookies from scratch 2 nights ago that were like the size of like a small like dinner plate. Nice. And they had this he took chocolate bars, like Grinaldi chocolate bars, like mm-hmm. Grinaldi, this the like fancy chocolate or whatever. And he crushed those up, so he froze them and then crushed them up and then used that instead of chocolate chips. Oh, they're so good. And then he put a little sea salt on top of them.
What a beaut, huh?
Oh man, he is such a beaut. Such a beaut, such a gem. Julian, it's funny because, you know, Cole's getting ready for college and we're doing college previews and we're trying to figure out what he wants to do. He wants to go to finance. He wants to go to international finance or business finance, something stupid like that.
Like, get him a North Face vest and let him go.
I know. Like, here, just be a real estate agent. no, but Julian wants to be a baker and he wants to move to Canada. So he's like legitimately has like a dream to go to the University of Winnipeg and then just be a baker and then just live in Canada. That's his life aspiration.
Okie doke. What? Where's the Canada piece come in?
When we went to Paris for the Olympics, he fell in love with the French culture. And
So he wants to go live in Montreal?
Yeah.
They're going to hate him so much.
Well, so my buddy Lou he was the first one to say, it's like there's a difference between French culture and French Canadian culture. And then also in language as well. It's like you learning Spanish at high school and then going to Cancun and thinking you're going to be able to just whiz through everything. It's like, no, sir. There is two different Spanish languages there. But he was just, he loved French culture and he always has loved to bake. We got him like one of these big mixers. Those super mixers.
Yep.
We got him that for Christmas. Like that's what we got him for Christmas. That's what he wanted. He loves to make food and just whatever it is. Like he just kind of like, and makes them from scratch.
Nice.
Makes his own sourdough, makes pizzas from scratch. I mean, the kid's got a real knack.
Interesting.
I know. Like, I don't know where it came from.
Kind of an unconventional hobby for high school, but
he loves it.
Not bad. He's not getting into trouble. It's one of the least troublemaking hobbies you could have.
I know. And like his hobby pays off too, because we get to eat it.
Exactly.
It's all good. So, that was.
How has this affected your macronutrient intake, Christopher?
You don't even want to know. Hey, I've been doing the Vitruvian for since the first of the year. I've been like super strong with the Vitruvian, four times a week doing workouts.
That's Vitruvian.com. What is the Vitruvian? Remind us.
That's the strength training machine that I did the commercials for.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Remember? So I went and looked up programs, and the first program that came up was mine. I'm like, nope, not going to do my own program. And then Justin Trelay's, nope, not going to do that. Brian Grasky's, nope, not going to do that. And they're my buddies. So I ended up having to do this guy named Gerald, who's from New Zealand, which I'm a little bit frustrated with because he keeps saying, when instead of saying a goblet squat, he keeps saying goblin squat. And I'm like, it's not a goblin squat. Like use the right term. But
disgusting.
But it also could be his Australian accent.
His Kiwi accent or his
Australian? He's Australian. He's
from New Zealand?
No, I didn't say he was from New Zealand.
You said he was from New Zealand.
Did I?
Yep.
Oh, my bad. No, okay. Yeah, he's from Australia.
Let's try to respect their culture. They're different islands, Christopher.
Hey, it's all the same. It's all South Pacific, whatever. They're all six of one, half the other. Let's get started.
Okay,
about
so you've
that.
Been. You've
I'm
going
to redact that. I'm not going to redact your stuff.
Beep,
but I'm
going to.
I'm not going to redact any of your Brad Culp stuff, but I'm going to totally redact mine.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Satire.
Yeah. No, but that's been. I don't know.
Because your strength training. Too many carbs. I'm not riding.
I'm going to be 54 this year, dude. I feel like I feel
perfect time to become a twig. Perfect time to commit to a healthy lifestyle.
Here's the hard part, though. It's like at some point in time, you're never going to get back to where you were.
Yep.
Right? I mean, you're training for your marathon because you got a midlife crisis coming up. I've already done that, right?
Yep.
I did my bike ride to Canada.
You're over the hump of your midlife crisis.
I'm on the other side. I'm like on the down. I'm on the descent from my midlife crisis.
You're cruising towards your post-life crisis. Yeah,
so I'm never going to be the same physically that I was, just because that's what life does to you. But I feel like looking at other people my age or younger, because that's my peer group, and when I'm doing athletic stuff, especially like most of the athletic stuff is hockey. I feel like I'm in the upper percentage of most people of my age physically. I mean, I'm not going to walk off and do an Ironman. I've got different parts of my body that are sore and broken, but I feel like I'm doing fairly good, right? Like, I can go fell a tree and take it and pick it up and stack it and not have a problem with that.
You know how I said, like, with my...
I can
when
build
I'm
a
looking
house.
At a house. You know, when I'm looking at a house, I don't like to criticize or critique it too hard.
Oh, I hate you.
You know, I'm just going to leave
you're
it there.
You're sitting here with these, like, judgmental eyes that no one can see. And you're like,
I'm just going to focus on the positive, and we won't delve into any points of improvement.
All I can see is that when we're at the Nook this year, I'm just going to be like,
Well, here's, okay, Chris, so we talked about weight management. Here's my question.
I'm going to order a side salad after you order your Nikki Supreme.
Oh, I'll just do the side salad, and can I have a, yeah, I'll just have a soda water.
Can I have a chicken piccata with a side salad?
Here's my question. I'm running the Twin Cities Marathon. I'm several months out. I'm
allegedly.
I'm signed up. I paid the money.
Yeah, so have I. I've done that before, too.
True. It's different than Ironman. You walk away from an Ironman entry fee, that hurts. But you walk away from a marathon entry fee, $150.
That's nothing.
It's not that bad.
Yeah.
I'm running around at about mid-190s right now.
Okay.
At when I was really restricting calories and full... blown, mostly doubles, swim training. As a senior in high school, I drifted below 150 pounds. I hit about 149, which was holding my weight, I would say, artificially a little bit too low, certainly lower than it needed to be for swimming. So on the spectrum of, call it 150 to 200, 150 being too low, if I'm still running around at 160, that's very, 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 very lean for me, I think.
Mm-hmm.
170 would be really robust and healthy, I think. 180 would be much better than I am now, but not crazy thin.
Yeah.
Let's call it, if I'm at 195 and I can drop to 185 or even 175, I can't get to 165. Realistically, I just don't think I'm going to be clean enough with my habits to get to 165 by October. For every 10 pounds I can shed over the coming months, how many seconds per mile do I gain in efficiency?
Oh, I'm sure there's a math equation for that.
Do you know it? Let's go over it. Let's run the numbers. What's the data?
Do
you think it's 30 seconds a mile? Think it's a minute a mile?
For 10 pounds?
Yeah.
No. It's not a minute a mile.
Not a minute? Okay.
Oh, my God. A minute a mile?
I think there's a diminishing returns. Like, the first 10 pounds will be the most significant in time savings.
It's 100% that. Because now you have to go, I think, the things that come with it also, not only are you just not moving that amount of weight, it's how much impact is going through your body because of, like, what's reverberating. It also, I think the more weight that you have, also the higher, like, likelihood you are to corrupt in your gait through endurance, the longer you go. But I wouldn't, not a minute, I would say... I don't know. It's going to be a bell curve at some point. Like, you're gonna get, it's like weight loss. You know, it's like you're going up, you're losing a bunch, and then, like, when you get closer to your goal, like, the last, like, couple pounds are the hardest to get. So I think, like, you're gonna, you know, it's you also are gonna get to a point where you look at losing energy reserves. So with the amount of focus you're putting on with calorie restriction, you're also looking at, you know, energy restriction. Like, you're not going to feel as supercharged. You're aging differently. Assuming that your testosterone count is going down lower every day because you're just getting to be an old grizzled man. As you approach the Dust Bowl era of your life,
the cliff of the age of 40.
Yeah. I mean, I would say there's something there, but it's not, you know, 10 pounds where you're at. If you lost 10 pounds, it would be, I just wonder if the reward is worth the work.
It certainly is. What I'm saying is for me to jump from 195 to 185, I think is very significant. I think to 175 gets me a lot further. I think the push from, if I can get to 170, I think that's a really lean, robust, healthy, normal weight for me.
Yeah.
But holding it lean to push to 165 or 160 is like extreme athletic focus. You know, it's like that would be where I get extreme diminishing returns. And in my ballpark estimation,
it's going to take a lot more than it did 10 years ago for you to do that, though.
Yeah.
You have a number of different things that are working against you. Metabolism is different for you now.
Yep.
You have a family.
Yep.
So you're
I have 100% more family than I used to.
I know. So your ability just to basically eat what you want when you want to is not there.
Yep.
right? I mean, you have like your sleep cycle is different. You're not as in control, so it becomes exponentially harder. So that's where I say, is the work worth the reward? Is sacrificing your ability to eat what your family is eating every night, is that to eat something different, for dad to be different for all of that, or dad to be, you know, having to be away from different things, is that worth 10 pounds? And is that worth whatever? Let's say it is a mile a minute.
Yep.
And, you know, is that worth it to you? Because the impact is not just the result of you going slower, but the result of you having this less time with your family.
Yeah. I think I think I am better off living in the 170s than I am in the 190s, obviously for all the health reasons and performance reasons.
Yeah.
So it's like, I know I should be down there, but gosh.
Are you putting the metric
food
of
is so tasty.
I know, it's so good. Are you putting the metric of your success as a, like, as an athlete or as an adult, or is that directly tied to whatever your time is going to be in the marathon?
Say, would you phrase that in a more less wordy fashion, please?
No, I'm going to go full Milchek on this thing. So are you saying that you are deeming the success of your marathon on your time? Is that it?
No, I never said that.
Okay.
No one ever said that. Did you hear me say a time goal once?
But if you're looking to drop weight specifically to go faster, then you're looking to say, well, if I drop more weight, I'm going to go faster. Then you're ultimately looking for a better time.
Oh, yeah.
So
I still, this year, I think I'll do it 2 years in a row.
Okay.
This year, I'm just getting my running legs back onto me. I've worked up to a consistent 4-day-a-week rhythm. I'm getting my long runs up to, within a month, I'll be able to touch maybe like 2-hour long runs.
Mm-hmm.
So I just need to work out the consistency and lay the groundwork, but I won't be able to even do the training necessary to really run what I would consider a fast time.
Yeah.
So I think it would be a 2-year project for me to hit a goal that I would consider like an important milestone, which is for me just breaking 3 hours. So if I'm consistent all throughout this year and then build on that consistency into next year,
yeah,
I would say I'd be within reach to reasonably expect to be at that performance level. But it would be completely unreasonable for me to expect to hit 3 hours from the paces I'm currently doing for my, you know, I did 12 miles as my long run this past weekend. I averaged like 8:51.
Yeah.
So it's like that, just realistically, it's like, I know I can be a sub 3 hour guy, but I'm not there. And it's too big of a rush to try and get there by this October.
Okay. Would you be willing to consider blood doping?
Well, that's allegedly why I wanted to speak to you about, do you have Brett Sutton's phone number, allegedly?
I mean,
do you think Brad Culp could be
there's
put
a
me
nurse
in, touch?
In the family.
Yeah.
There's a nurse in the family.
Hey. Can a nurse practitioner prescribe EPO?
or give you a blood transfusion?
Can you give me, you're a pediatric nurse practitioner. Can you give me a blood transfusion, sweetheart?
You're in the basement, like here, you're pumping like it's a plasma center.
Yeah, I'm just taking the longer approach because I really enjoy running.
That's the biggest thing right here.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that you enjoy it. You enjoy being physically active, fit. You incorporate the kids. I'm not trying to argue with you. I'm just saying that there are people who do things and it's at the expense of something that they may not be aware of.
Yep.
And then when they're all done and when it's all done and said, the things that you lost are things you can't get back.
Yep. Time with the kids, you can't get back.
Yeah.
So would I, to your question, would I completely alter my lifestyle to where I'm eating a weird fruity tooty dinner instead of whatever I cook for my kids? No. I want to cook for my kids a very reasonable diet.
Mm-hmm.
So I think having our family aligned around like, okay, a decent protein, some carb, and some fruits and veggies.
Yeah. You try your best.
Yep. We're oriented around that. So for me, that point of diminishing returns, if I wanted to get to my top pinnacle best I could ever do performance level, I would need to be probably 155 to 160 pounds. To get there, I'd have to hold myself in an abnormal state and lead a lifestyle that's going to compromise other facets of life that are not worth compromising. But to get to 170s and to arrive at a 3-hour level of fitness, I can get there without undue discomfort and sacrifice in the rest of the lifestyle.
Yeah, I think that's a good. I think that's good.
And I'm so glad you signed up for the marathon with me. You'll announce the start quick. Join me at the start line.
I'm gonna
huh?
take off my starting uniform like they do in basketball. And I'm just gonna get right out
and
there.
Off we trot.
Oh my gosh! I miss running. That's the biggest thing I think out of
because you've been off of running for several years, right?
I tried to get back. Well, since I hurt my back.
Yep.
I tried to get back, and I still have lingering issues with my right leg. Like I will find that my right leg will I still have a little bit of like almost a deadness in the heel of my right foot. It feels differently. If you look at the way my shoes wear differently inside and out. I just know from a running standpoint, it just hasn't been the same. And that's difficult. I tried. I really did. I tried going back and getting into it, and I used, just going around Lake Nokomis as yep. my thing. And it's like, I couldn't do it.
You tried carbon plated shoes?
No.
The carbon shoes.
It's not the shoes. What it is, it's the neuromuscular connection in my right leg to what I was doing.
Yep.
Because even when I'm walking, I can feel my leg sometimes go and be a little bit wonky.
Hmm.
Like if there's a little rise in the sidewalk, it's always my right foot that'll hit it before my left foot. It's the strangest thing, and it's something that is like I don't have a way to tell you how frustrating it is. There's something physiologically that I can't change. Now, like, can I? Yeah. Like, I mean, I work with Paralympians that have 1,000 times higher limitations than I have. You know, could I work through it and could I get through? Yeah, I could. But it's very frustrating that it was something that I had.
Yep.
And it's not there.
The simplicity of running, it's tough when you lose it.
Yeah, I remember just like having some satisfaction of being able to get up and run an hour.
Yep.
And just not that being an issue. I've ran in so many different places in the world as a means of working out and as a bang for your buck for a calorie burn.
Yep.
Nothing beats running.
Nothing.
And I worked for a long time to get my gait into be a good, forward striking gait. I have a very functional gait. I still can teach it, but I just can't run.
Yep.
I mean, I can run, like I can run to the park, but like, I can't like run a marathon. I wouldn't be able to do that.
The level of PT and whatever degrees of treatment and process you would have to undergo to.
I have nerve damage.
Fully get back or feel like you're competent again. It's diminishing returns. It just wouldn't be worth the time and rigmarole.
I'm not sure that the nerve damage that I have would ever PT itself back.
Yeah.
You know, even to the point where right here, as I'm pointing to the backside of my right heel and rubbing it, like it feels like it's numb.
Hmm.
It always has. And so it's something that's always physically there. And it's frustrating. Mainly it's frustrating because I know the guy that's up in that picture that's right next to you. Like,
yep.
I remember that. I remember just being able to do those things. And like, I still enjoy doing most of it. You know, I just can't do it at that level. The things that I can do, cycling, hockey, those are probably why I leaned into more of those.
Yep.
Because the neuromuscular connection in my legs doesn't need to be at that same level. And so I can still enjoy it. And I enjoy cycling.
Yeah.
More than you can ever imagine. I love riding. And I know you don't see me out there doing it as much.
Correct. I was just going to note that.
But in my life, there are a lot of other things that kind of take me away. And so I could do that, but I would have to negate and neglect a lot of other things. And so I can't.
It all exists in a balance.
It is. It is. And the older you get, the harder it is.
Yeah.
You know, but that's it.
Well, you're at the next chapter where the kids have so many activities.
Oh, yeah. But I'm not getting to that point where they're now doing it themselves.
Yeah.
But a lot of it is, time doing other things. You know, I'm now at the point where I enjoy other things. I enjoy fishing. You know, I enjoy being outside. I enjoy doing doing things that are just different. But I do love riding my bike up the lake, you know, riding that whole Timberman course and just being out in the woods and dodging, you know, freaking horse flies as you're going up the climb, going back towards the descent, coming back into, you know, Sugar Lake. You know, I love doing that. And that the fact that I'm going so slow, the horse flies are keeping up with me. Well, most people are, right? Because it's like it's uphill. But it's still, there's a lot there. But you have to, as you get older, you find a different balance in what you do. And for that, that's just kind of where it's at.
Yep. I get it.
Yeah. On that note, I'm going to call it a day because I got to do other thing, the work balance. So, Devin, it was a joy seeing you here. Soda, like, left you, I saw.
That's very unusual.
That's, yes.
Something's up.
Well, Jill came up here. That's
why.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah, you were Trump. She has a Trump card on. Soda for that. So, enjoy your spring break that you have coming up here. Enjoy the warmer weather. And I would say as soon as we get back from our spring break, we will be out cycling on a more regular basis. I promise you. That is my old dust man promise to you, you little beaut.
That'll be a beaut if you hold up to that promise.
I will. I'll be a beaut and not a duster.
All right.
All right. And for all of you out there, you guys be beauts too. Don't be dusters. And the best way to do that is to just be a little better.